Is foreign aid the best solution for empowering poor countries and elevating them from poverty to wealth? Ishmael explores and answers this question today on Freedom and Virtue, the podcast.
I want to welcome all of you to this third installment of our podcast. Today, we will be discussing the important question of foreign aid as a wrong goal to mitigate or eliminate poverty around the world. And this will be our final discussion on poverty around the world, although the question of poverty will resurface in subsequent episodes. But today we will be discussing foreign aid. Is foreign aid the best way to help poor countries get out of poverty? Has it been historically the best way used by societies to move into wealth? These are important questions, and the answers are not as simple as we might think. It may seem that just injecting resources into societies will help them eliminate their poverty. But the reality is that many nations remain poor in spite of the availability of resources because their institutions lack certain elements necessary for the elimination of poverty. And this is so important. There is an institutional reality to the question of poverty. This institutional reality is based on certain problems, internal problems to those societies. The first and most obvious one is the question of corruption. There are people with power who take away resources from other people. But another problem that we can mention that keeps societies in poverty is that they're societies are extractive. They are not societies that encourage the creation of wealth, but the opposite, the extraction of wealth and resources from civil society. Another question or problem that keeps societies, nations, in poverty is that they are unpredictable societies. The unpredictability and the lacking in personal security that people experience creates the conditions for the perpetuation of poverty. And this is very obvious. If things are not predictable, you are not going to take much risk in life. And unless you take risks, you will not reap on the rewards that keeps people moving forward economically. Another element that we see in these societies is that they tend to be paternalistic. The government is there to be sustained by the people instead of the other way around. And finally, these societies tend to be dominated by elites, by clans, or by thugs with big guns. So the question remains, is placing more resources, placing foreign aid in such hands going to help in creating better conditions? Or is it a wasteful exercise that also strengthens the very frameworks of power that created poverty in the first place? As foreign aid is an externalist solution, there is then this idea that external solutions are what are required. There is a difference between an externalist solution and an internal solution. An externalist solution cannot change the internal problem of exclusionary institutions. And let me repeat that because it's so important. An externalist solution cannot change the internal problem of exclusionary institutions. It cannot change the reality of societies based on plunder, of societies based on insecurity, on paternalism, on talks with guns, on corruption and extractive systems within those societies. Even worse, externalist solutions create this sense that we are powerless to change our condition. What we need is intervention from others. They have the answer to our problems. We are passive recipients of their magnanimity. We are here to be assisted. We don't have what it takes. And the one who becomes the patron, the one who becomes the solution to our problem, eventually becomes the culprit. We are innocent. We have been made to be poor. So we should expect continual intervention because, after all, they owe us. External forces outside of our control become both the solution and the culprit, the problem and the answer. And we, again, remain as passive recipients instead of active participants in lives built by ourselves, in better societies built by our own efforts. The reality is that there are problems in these societies, but there are also actors, individuals, people who want to change the realities of their own existence. They want to become entrepreneurs, but they find no support, no markets, no way to compete with free stuff. Let me give you an example from my own life. I grew up in Puerto Rico in the 1960s and 70s, when Puerto Rico was transitioning from an agrarian society, backward, exceedingly poor agrarian society, into a more industrialized society. At the same time, we were the beneficiaries, quote-unquote, beneficiaries of the Puerto Rican Emergency Relief Administration coming from the United States. The free stuff dumped at us. I remember the free cheese and the free milk and the free products that will come in these bags that the American government sent to us. And we were so grateful. You know, the reality is that those types of assistance do help at the moment. They have a momentary effect that creates the illusion that the problem is being fixed. So there is some food at the plate. But we remain poor. And we are still poor today. We are still poor today after all that intervention. So it creates this sense that the solution comes from the Americans, from the United States. And when things get really tough in Puerto Rico, we just move to the United States in search of what? In search of opportunity. In search for opportunity to engage ourselves in work, to transform our lives by the choices we make. So we have intuitively this realization that the answer is not aid. The answer is opportunity. So foreign aid creates this kind of false senses, this false sense that the problem is being fixed, that the answer comes from outside of us, and also that the culprit for our condition comes from the external forces impinging on our existence. We continue to hear the media, the government, the entertainment industry telling us that what we need to do, the right thing to do, is to intervene to help these people, to help our fellow men, to help the children starving and needing around the country. And why is that? Because there are forces invested in the perpetuation of these systems, these transactional systems of care. Let me recount to you a 2005 rousing speech by United Kingdom's Chancellor, by the United Kingdom's Chancellor of the Exchequer. I'm reminded here of Professor William Easterly of New York University, who spent 16 years at the World Bank, and his words after he heard a rousing speech by Gordon Brown, who at that time in 2005 was the United Kingdom's Chancellor of the Exchequer, and he was calling on the United Kingdom and the West to spend more and more and more money for foreign aid. And Professor Easterly said the following after listening to the rousing speech by this United Kingdom's leader. The West spent $2.3 trillion and still had not managed to get $4 bed nets to poor families. The West spent $2.3 trillion and still had not managed to get $3 to each new mother to prevent 5 million deaths. The West spent $2.3 trillion and children are still carrying firewood and not going to school. In other words, simply pouring money into the problem is not going to fix the problem. It makes for great rousing speeches. It may make you feel good about the situation. But the problems of poverty are not about how we feel. The problem of poverty is about what is the best way to help those in need, how to place them in charge of their own existence, how to cooperate in their efforts to have better lives in societies of dignity, societies of work, societies of opportunity, societies built by the people themselves, finding the internal strength that is there, the beauty and the power and the intelligence and the effort that is there in those societies, and how to tap into that existing network of possibility, networks of strength, networks of work, networks of effort that exist in those societies and help them transcend the realities of their poverty and find a better life for themselves, for their families, and for generations to come. In fact, there are some people who believe that not only foreign aid is not helpful, but that foreign aid is actually the main culprit, the main cause of poverty in the third world. They point out that often recipients of foreign aid are far worse after the aid than before the aid. How can that be? How can it be that after we intervene and we bring resources to those countries are worse off than before the aid came? Very simply, their economies grow slower. Their systems do not change. The economy grows slower and the systems that create the problem in the first place remain in place. And the elites that benefit from the aid become more entrenched. So yes, we see a momentary initial support, initial change. I saw that in Puerto Rico. There were some cheese and some milk on my plate. Some problems were fixed, but the economy slowed down. And the real entrenched systems that created the problem in the first place remain in place. Scholars such as Oxford trained African economist Dambisa Mayo are not opposed to emergency aid during a catastrophe, for example. The problem is foreign aid given directly to governments, or what she calls systemic aid. Even loans become grants. And why loans become grants? Paternalistic condescension. People feel sorry of making these poor people pay back what they have received. So the elites in power know this well. So they are strengthened after the aid and create this system of aid that perpetuates their existence. Whether grants were given to industrial construction or any other seemingly positive endeavor, the results have been the same since the 1940s. We intervene after the rousing speeches by the politicians and the Hollywood elites put together an event with music and feel sorry stories and videos that show the poverty in the world. The grant becomes a loan. The loan is never used for the purposes intended. It ends up packing the pockets of the powerful, and the society becomes poorer after we intervene than they were before the intervention. I believe that aid, even given by well-intended ministries, or the glamour aid given by the celebrities, or the aid given with the promises of tackling corruption or inaugurating democratic reforms, constitutes a deficient use of resources that do not help end poverty. The reason why this well-intended assistance is ineffective is that it is given at the beginning, at the forefront. It is not given as a result of already enacted reforms. It is not given as a reward for having begun to change and fix the situations of structural problems within those societies. They are given with the promise of change, and the promise of change never happens. People stay poor, so there is more of a call to intervene because people are poorer and poorer and poorer, and after all, we owe them. And this continues as a cycle of dependency between the poor and the rich, where the rich benefit out of a conscience that is erased of any bad feelings, and also of political and economic interests that benefit from the exercise, and the elites in power in the poor societies benefit because they know that some good is going to be coming out of our poverty, and that good is going to come for me, even if it doesn't benefit my people. Aid is given even for good purposes, but aid given for good purposes is problematic due to an underlying problem. Money is fungible. It moves easily to other purposes, including filling the pockets of the powerful. Money becomes the instrumental cause of the powerful remaining in power. Therefore, there is an incentive to perpetuate the problem that causes the success in retaining power. There is a sad joke that was told to me by an African friend many years ago. There was a gathering of foreign ministers in Central America, and a Central American leader took his African guest to close to a window and show him a new bridge that was not far away that they could see through a window. And the Latin American leader looked at the African and, pointing to himself, said 50%, meaning that he got a cut of 50% of the money that was supposed to be spent building that bridge. A few months later, the same two men were at a similar gathering, but this time in Africa. And the African host took his guest to a similar window and, pointing to a field where nothing had happened, he put his hands on his chest and said, 100%. That gives you the level of corruption in the African man's country. At least in some countries, some good happened. There was corruption, but a bridge was built. On the other case, nothing happened, and all the benefit went to the pockets of the corrupt. And this is not only in Africa. This happens all over the world, where corruption pays. Not only does corruption pay, worse, there is often no repercussions for the misuse of the money, only more of an emotional appeal to help the poor. Is it possible to grow economies and eliminate poverty without foreign aid? As economist James Perron writes, as cited in The Poverty of Nations by Wayne Grudem and Barry Asmus, and I quote, a World Bank report admitted that 75% of their African agricultural projects were failures. President Mobutu of Zaire managed to build a fortune in his Swiss bank account that was estimated as high as $10 billion. End of quote. Even when Marxist dictatorships such as those of Ethiopia's Mengistu Haile Mariam or Somalia's warlord Zaire Barre or Tanzania's Julius Nyerere asked for relief, Europe mobilized to give it, and they gave it. They perpetuated the corrupt regimes that stole and raped their own countries in the name of helping the poor. Yes, it is possible to eliminate poverty without foreign aid. We have seen how foreign aid is not only ineffective, but it is also harmful. And we have seen why. First, it detaches reward from accomplishment. Earned success is the best way to help people getting out of poverty because they see that they have what it takes to move themselves into a better situation. Second, it creates incentives for military coups. If the aim of a coup is to capture resources for financial advantage, then foreign aid is one incentive for the perpetuation of military wars, wars of benefit where people die. So create unstable societies where violence is order of day. Third, it promotes corruption that interferes with the rule of law. We can be reminded of situations like La Mordida, which happens in many Latin American countries, where the people who work for the government expect you to pay them some money for something to happen in your behalf. Fourth, it rewards failure. In response to growing poverty, donors give more aid. It creates a vicious cycle that chokes investment, instills a culture of deceit, and encourages systematic corruption. So entrenched is this systematic corruption that Somolu and Robinson in the book Why Nations Fail tell us that 10 to 20% of aid ever reaches its target. Only 10 to 20% of the money sent to poor nations to help the poor ever reaches the hands of the poor. Fifth, it supports what is called rent-seeking, the use of government authority to take and make money without greater and more diverse production. The best example here is Venezuela. Venezuela discovered oil many years ago, and since then, the society has become worse and worse and worse, poorer and poorer and poorer. One of the reasons is that they did not diversify their industry. Why bother to diversify if they have discovered the golden answer, the black gold of oil? It was the answer to all their problems. All they had to do was to cut that pie of the money coming from oil in a way that everyone had their piece. In reality, the corrupt have continued to steal the money coming from oil. And today, Venezuela has to import oil and gas into the country because they don't produce enough for their people. Having one of the largest reserves of oil in the world, they cannot provide gasoline for the automobiles of people. And what happens with the system in Venezuela? The system is extractive. It's a socialist system that takes out of the nation the resources on behalf of advancing an ideology, the ideology of Marxist revolution. And by tying the people to dependency on the government, their poverty becomes an aid for the perpetuation of their power. If all of this is true, why then is the West continuing to give and give and give more? The first reason is, in a sense, aid has become a business, an enterprise, a corporation that employs over 500,000 bureaucrats all over the world, from hundreds of aid agencies. Their livelihood depends on the perpetuation of the problem. This is why there is not much rigor in lending or giving to foreign countries. The reward is in the giving, not in the finding out what works. If you try to find out what works, you will find out what doesn't work. Then you will be seen as blaming the victims of oppression, the victims of corporations, the victims of capitalist systems of exclusion, the victims of historic forces outside of the control of the poor. Therefore, there is no incentive whatsoever in you finding out corruption in these countries. You don't want to be seen as a racist trying to control the poor and doing what the colonial masters did in the past. It's easy, really, real easy, to blame the one who finds the problem as the one inventing lies against those who are historically oppressed. The second reason is very simple. Let me ask you, if your business is about giving food away, for your budget to grow, what do you need? More or less hungry people? The reality is that you need more hungry people. So the state benefits from this exercise. The state is tied to the lack of success, because the lack of success in ending poverty brings out a call for more resources for my agency, because the problem gets worse and worse and worse. And it gets worse not because what we are doing is ineffective. It's always because you did not give us enough resources. And finally, foreign aid organizations often don't want to find out the truth. They only want the anecdote, the tear, the synecdoche. What is a synecdoche? It's an image that is used to condense and to narrow an entire problem around that image. For example, the image of a hungry child makes you give money because you want to help that hungry child. So the entire problem is summarized on that single image, which avoids us looking forward and scraping behind the image to find out what is really happening here. It's easier to give the check. It feels better to give the checks. It relieves the conscience better to give the check, even if the problem remains. So we can safely conclude that foreign aid that is not attached to real success, real prior success in the changing of the structures and institutional frameworks and economic systems and the changes in the rule of law in a poor country is not going to help in attending the needs of the poor. Let us help, but help with the expectation, and more than an expectation, help as a reward for real systemic changes in the way societies are run, and we will begin to see an end to the problem of abject poverty in the world. Entrepreneurship is the answer. Rule of law is the answer. Helping people discover the beauty of entrepreneurship and the importance of creating systems of law that protect human rights, protects the livelihood of people, and protect private property have the best chance of making a real impact in the lives of people living in societies that have great, great possibilities if only we respect the poor more than what we feel sorry for them. If only we were to become convinced that respecting the poor is more important than feeling sorry for them. That feeling sorry for the poor is not going to really help them get out into a better existence built by themselves. That instead of getting in front of them to help them, sometimes we need to just go to the side and walk side by side with the poor and let them struggle with our help. They're always way out in the wait, but let them build lives of production and success by their own efforts. I hope that you enjoyed this three-part series on poverty, and we will continue to talk about the questions of poverty, both in the international sphere, but more importantly, in the American context. We will very soon start a series on how to help the poor here in America through ministries and through the effort of other good people, and how we can understand that the same way that foreign aid is not necessarily the best way to help the poor in the international context, welfare support and local interventional systems using the state, the government, as the primary agent in trying to assist the poor might not be the best way of helping the poor here in America. But next week we'll have a treat. We'll have one talk about the question of race in America. It's going to be titled Theories of Race, and it's very pertinent to what's happening in our country today. And I'm sure you will enjoy listening to that lecture that I had the opportunity to give at the Acton Institute through their Acton University conference a couple of years ago, and has received good accolades anywhere I have given that lecture. So I hope that you tune in next week for that talk. And more importantly right now is, if you have any comment, please go to our website and leave the comment. If you have any questions lingering in your mind concerning the series we just concluded, please let me know and I will address those questions, and we'll be seeing you next time.
Thank you for listening to Freedom and Virtue, the podcast. Now, learn more about the Freedom and Virtue Institute by visiting www.fvinstitute.org. Ishmael is also the author of the book, Not Tragically Colored. You can connect with him on the Freedom and Virtue Institute Facebook page. And don't forget to subscribe and give us a positive review. Thanks. Until next time, stay engaged. I was thinking this was the way to go, and you put up your